Last month saw a guilty plea in Australia's first criminal prosecution for creating sexually explicit deepfake images without consent. The case comes after the government announced its intention to legislate against so-called nudify apps in September last year, with the eSafety Commissioner this morning detailing actions taken against another app operating in Australia. The Wire's Aspen Bailharts talked to Beth McNamara, National Education Manager for the Daniel Morcombe Foundation, about how to keep children and young people safe online from deepfakes.
So recently, the Friends School in Hobart saw a case of deepfake sexual abuse. And after that happened, some of the parents voiced their disappointment with the response, and they were calling for a victim-focused response. So in a case like this, what does a victim-focused response look like?
So when a child or a young person discloses something like this, so image-based abuse, the first response from anyone should not be panic or punishment or interrogation. The first response should be, I'm really glad you told me. It's very brave of you to talk about this. This is not something you have to go through alone. And just reassuring them that you're there to work through it with them, that it's something that you'll be doing together. And the big reason for that is that it's such a big deal for children and young people and even for adults to disclose harm of any kind, but particularly of sexual harm, because of all the stigma and shame and taboo around talking about this. And so you really, a lot of the responses I've heard over my career have kind of have this theme of, why didn't you tell me sooner, or why didn't you come to me when it first happened? And I think we need to flip that script to say something more like, how did you manage to come and talk to me about this, given the amount of hurdles and barriers there are in the way of you talking about something, because the barriers are that, you know, kids feel like they'll get blamed, that they'll be judged, that they'll lose their devices, so their phone or their iPad, like to that punishment response, that they're the problem. And so the fear is often what stops them from seeking help or from talking with someone. So really it is about affirming that for them. And I guess, you know, for these parents, our legal system, unfortunately, particularly our criminal responses, can be victim blaming. People often talk about systemic abuse, having to go through those systems. It's like they've experienced abuse once and then having to go through the systems that are set up to support them is a secondary harm that they go through, because it's just, unfortunately, we're not where we need to be in Australia with how our institutions and legal systems respond. Not always. We are getting, look, I've been doing this work for 20 years, and I think in my time of being in this sector, we have seen some incremental changes. The fact that the legal system are litigating on these issues, on image-based abuse now, is unreal. Like, it's really awesome that that's happening, but legal consequences are not enough, and we also know that our legal system has failed miserably for many, many years to respond to sexual violence. So it's not the answer by any stretch of the imagination, but it is good that they're coming to the party. But we really need education and early intervention and supportive environments, just as much, if maybe not more.
Yeah. Okay. And that's what you do. So you're doing this education, you're delivering programs to schools and young people. Obviously, I'm sure anyone would agree it's better to prevent this before it happens. So what are you teaching young people about deepfakes?
I guess it's really important to understand what deepfake abuse is. And I think people think that it's, you know, this new thing, but it's not about technology. It's an age-old issue that humans have had, which is about consent and safety. These are old issues. They're now happening through the use of new tools. So AI, obviously, being that, you know, the vehicle that some of this stuff is taking place. And I think, you know, it's the education is kind of threefold. Like, we educate kids directly, obviously, about this, but we also educate the people around children and young people within their ecosystem, so particularly the adults. And it is about that distinction between online and real life. It doesn't exist in the way that perhaps, you know, I'm an older person compared to young people. And the way that I grew up was that, you know, we had our online identity and our offline. That doesn't happen so much anymore for children and young people. Their social world, their friendships, their identity, their sense of belonging, it's all deeply connected to digital, like the digital environment. And so when images are, like deep fakes are shared, even if they're fake, that term fake is thrown bandied around a lot, the impact of that isn't fake. The impact is very real for children and young people. And so, you know, often some of the mistakes that adults make is focusing possibly too heavily on the fakeness of an image and whether it's authentic or not. So from a child safety perspective, the, you know, the more important question we need to check in with kids and young people is, was there harm? Did you feel violated? Were you humiliated? Like, what are the ongoing safety repercussions of this, depending on what it was? And those impacts are real regardless of how that image was created or not. So, you know, we're kind of in a bit of a new world for the adults. So it is about not just about educating kids, it's very much about educating the people that really have the obligation and the responsibility to keep kids safe. That's on the adults in the room, it's not on the kids. But if it means that, you know, kids are going to be kept safe by being educated on what is possible, then we also go in and we talk directly with kids about what can happen online and how to keep themselves safe. Some of that, you know, is like, you know, all the stuff we know about, like the tech safeguarding, but a lot of it's about critical thinking. It's about being discerning when someone is contacting you, you know, questioning everything. We're really, at the Denny Morcombe Foundation, we're really really going right back to basics around digital literacy with children and young people. And that's sort of where we're starting.
We've recently seen the first court prosecution for deepfake sexual abuse, but the barrier to entry to doing this is so low. There could be so many cases if every instance of this leads to a court case. So do you see prosecution as an effective way to stop this behaviour?
I think it's wonderful that regulation is starting to keep pace and we're holding big tech accountable for kids' safety. But the legal system, that's the end point. You know, that's tertiary, that's after something's happened. As you've just said, Aspen, these cases getting to that point are going to be few and far between. You know, I've worked in sexual violence now for two decades, and the kids that I've worked with who've been through this, you know, there's a small percentage that make it through to the legal system, and that's with, you know, that's with a decent amount of evidence as well. We have terrible statistics in this country and really globally around how we respond to this issue. So we're wanting to pull, you know, this work further upstream, which is, you know, really, really educating at the earliest possible point. And that's about educating the adults around kids when they're really young, so under five, obviously. But then when we can start to talk to kids, children and young people about their responsibilities to be a safe digital citizen, it's about educating them as well.
Do you see a role for restorative justice or working with perpetrators? Is that at all part of your work with the Daniel Morcombe Foundation?
I mean, restorative justice is brilliant, and we're seeing it, you know, delivered a lot more in schools. Very much the work of the foundation. Because we are trying to do the, you know, primary prevention as early as possible, we're working with children and young people. And we've got to remember that, you know, when we talk about perpetrators, we don't use that terminology when we talk about kids. We talk about children and young people with harmful sexual behaviours. Adults, it's a different story. We have different responses for adults. There are even some restorative models with adults. But I'm a firm believer that we need to have very different responses for those two groups. And for children and young people, you want to be starting at a restorative place, because there's incredible global evidence that's your best bang for buck in terms of preventing ongoing harm. It also means that the kid who has engaged in these harm types gets the response that they need, because, you know, we know statistically those kids have often had some pretty difficult times themselves. Not always, but quite commonly that's the case. There's, you know, there's a gendered perspective in all of this work that we need to take into account. So when we're looking at restorative responses, we need to be looking at what's going to be working for boys and young men comparatively to what's going to be working in our, you know, responses to girls and then to gender non-binary folks as well within that. But it's really important that we have a multitude of responses, because this one-size-fits-all approach with a blunt instrument like the legal system, it's not the thing that we know prevents. It does in some cases, absolutely, and that's when I talk a lot about adults. There are some people who we absolutely need to have a criminal response for. It's illegal to sexually assault someone, but doesn't mean that when we're working with children, young people, that a criminal legal response is always the best avenue. And, you know, an example, because the spectrum of harmful sexual behaviours is so broad, an example might be, in a school environment where there is someone who indecently touches another kid, compared to, for instance, back in a home environment where someone is sexually assaulted by their sibling. They'll need two very different responses. You know, we don't want to be approaching it with just this sort of blunt way of responding to such a complex issue.
In September last year, the government announced that it intended to legislate against so-called nudify apps. Mm-hmm. They are taking some bold steps to protect children from adult content online, even going as far as banning them from most social media. So clearly they are responding to this issue. Does it look like an effective response to you?
I think the eSafety Commission is doing marvellous work. They've moved from being, I guess, an education and prevention body themselves into more of a regulatory, a body that has sort of some teeth to litigate on these issues. And the fact that they're holding big tech accountable, the fact that they're holding platforms accountable is where we need to be. This individual response, right down to the smallest common denominator, the individual, it doesn't fix the issue. You need to go to the source. My hope down the track, at the moment they're regulating around platforms. So in nudify apps, for instance, they're booting them out of Australia, which is great. You know, there's no reason to have a nudify app. There's nothing good that can come from that. So they're doing great work in that. But I would love to see them, you know, our country and other countries holding big tech accountable. So putting some of these safeguards on actual devices, so on phones and on iPads, that's so incredibly important. And that's a harder push because there's a financial attachment to that with big tech, as there always is, but hopefully we get to that point. And I don't doubt that, you know, the eSafety Commissioner is brave enough to tackle that at some point. I'm really impressed with what they've done so far, and they should be commended for the work that they've been doing.
More information on child safety is available on the Daniel Morcombe Foundation's website.
We've got our resources now currently on the Daniel Morcombe Foundation's Adolescent Hub that look at sextortion and image-based abuse. And anyone can go on, educators, children, young people themselves, and parents and carers, to access some of those resources for free. All of our work is free. So, really encourage folks to jump on and to support Day for Daniel on the 30th of October.
Beth McNamara, National Education Manager for the Daniel Morcombe Foundation, speaking there to The Wire's Aspen Bale-Hartz.